Welcome, everybody. Mordechai Plaster here. Baruch Hashem, we have a robust group of talented Rabbeim and professionals that deliver wonderful shiurim throughout the week, and I'm very happy to mark this progress and success, and I hope that, God willing, it continues. We are discussing Parshas Vayera, and one of the key things or elements is to really look at the beginning, middle, and end of the Parsha and see what we can extract. And so from the beginning of the Parsha, Vayera Elav Hashem Beloni Mamre Behu Yoshev Pesach Al Kachom Ayom. So the question is, why does it say Vayera Elav Hashem and not his name? He has a name. His name is called Avram. Second question is, why does it say Eloni Mamre? What is the significance of Mamre? Because there was Unar Eshkol as well. These are three of Avram's friends that went to fight with him. Against the four kings that were successful against the five kings who had subsequently taken Lot as a captive and who subsequently fell to Abraham in battle. Some say there was Eliezer because there was that he took 318 men, and that's the gematria of Eliezer. But whichever one it is, the significance of Mamre being mentioned over here is something of note. Second, the third is Yoshev Pesach HaOel Kechom Ayom, that he was sitting outside his tent Kechom Ayom in the heat of day. Why was it so hot? How does Rashi know that there were three angels? Or why were there three angels and not four angels? These are like four or five questions we can ask just on the opening pasuk of the Parsha. As we turn to the middle of the Parsha, we see that there's a pasuk that says Haksah Kasah Ba'elai, that when it came to Sodom, the destruction of Sodom was predicated upon the call of this one young girl. Who was this young girl? And what did she cry? What was it? So, why was that so significant? And at the end of the Parsha, we find that after the Akedah, it says that Vayiach Advar Me'ela V'Elokim V'yigal Avram Le'mar Hinei Yod Be'elan Nocha Achicha, that Avram Vino has all of these, his brother, he has all of these nephews and children that are being born to his brother Nachar, who was Nachar. And why does he have so many children? What does it say by Ichad Bar Me'ela? What exactly is going on over there? And what is the father of Akedah? This is the fifth Aliyah on Rosh Hashanah. So we have to ask ourselves, if Hashem wanted us to be, you know, blown away by the actions of Avram and Yitzchak when it came to the Akedah, that it should just finish with the Akedah and then begin with Chayesara. Why does it tell us about this one paragraph? So some are of the opinion that it is meant to tell us the lineage of where Rivka comes from, the daughter of Bethuel, and Lavan, of course, is the sister, the brother-sister relationship, to Bethuel, and how did he get the name Bethuel? There's a whole medrash on that. Clearly, there's about six questions, six answers, at least, if you look at the Mefarshim on these eight or ten questions that I've just raised. But I'd like to try to give you one or two of them just to move through them and then close out the 10 minutes, because that's what we try to keep to. So the first question is, Avraham Avinu has a name. Why is his name not mentioned? And the answer is because as an individual changes, and Avraham Avinu was in a state of change as a result of going through the Nila, because whereas beforehand he would welcome people, now he was actually searching them out. He changed his whole personality when it came to engaging with people, and because he was becoming a different person, because he was shifting from an Avram to an Avraham, then that's what led him to have no name. Because he was literally shifting. He was whole DNA. Everything about him was different. And this is how the Kedushas Levi explains it. Hashem takes down three letters, Shin, Vav, Reish, out comes an ox. Aleph, Dalet, Mem, Adam, Adam, out comes man. And so on, v'chule, v'chule, as a result of the Ritva Hashem Shemayim Nasu. So with all of the creations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into existence, it all comes from the derivation of letters that form images and different functionalities, animals, humans, whatever it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to create it starts from the formation of these letters, and as they fuse together, out comes the output. The second is what's the significance of Mamre? So Mamre, unlike Eshkol, who said Avram sonim kover lecha, that the Rosh Tevas of Eshkol was that Avram Vinu, you shouldn't go ahead with the Nila, because you know your enemies will pounce upon you. Aner had said that you're so old, you probably won't even survive. And Mamre turns to him and says, don't listen to these guys, because you're the one who jumped into a fiery pit and survived. You're the one who went to battle and you came out unscathed. You're the one who's going to go through this Nila and live. You're going to be successful. No one's going to hurt you. You're not going to die as a result. You're going to actually have another, almost the doubling of your life. You're supposed to live to 180 years, but you're going to live to 175. But not to worry. So hence his name, Mamre, stands for Rosh Tevos, Maher, Male, Ratzon, Avicha, Sheva Shamayim. You should go ahead and do the will of Hashem who said to do this, to do this Mila. And then there's obviously other questions that come from this. Why was Avraham Avinu asking questions? Why did he seek consult from others? There are answers to this, but the Ramban and elsewhere, there are multiple answers to that question, one of which was that Avraham Avinu was concerned about the self-mutilation, that he had told people not to toss their kids into Molech and other idolatrous circumstances where the people were just giving up their children in order for the idols, and he was concerned that people would be looking at that unfavorably. So there were some calculations that Avinu has in mind, but he was certainly, said the Mefarshim, he was going to go through it no matter what, but he was somewhat concerned about what the perception of others through that act would yield. The other questions are, why was it that it was Kechom Ayom? So there's the Zohar Kodesh brings down that there's an Aleph and there's two Yuds in an Aleph. There's the Yud, and there's a Vav in the middle, and there's a Yud that's facing on the lower bend that's facing upward, and there's a Yud that's on the higher bend that's facing downward. If you look at how someone writes an Aleph in a Sefer Torah, you'll see something interesting about how it's designed. So there's a hishtokakut. There's a desire for the lower bend yud, which represents to attach itself to the higher bend, which that sometimes creates a friction, which is also a heat. And the fusion of these two yuds into one, which is what Avraham Avinu was propelling himself from one level to another level. And I'm sorry if this makes no sense to many people. It doesn't make much sense to me. But this is how the Zohar Kodesh explains, and hopefully, God willing, with years, I'll be able to understand a little bit deeper, this yearning that Avraham Avinu had was so strong, his desire to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not just God. He was very much interested in serving mankind to such a fulfilling extent that he literally was bending these yuds so that they could coalesce and form a new vision, a new way of serving Hashem. And that creates a certain chama, a certain type of heat that Avraham Avinu was able to manifest. And then the question is, we see that there are three angels. Why were there three and not four? And it's interesting that Rashi tells us, Amrei Bichama. Here we have somebody trying to explain to us what heat is all about, and his name happens to be heat. And so he's explaining to us that there were three angels that came and appeared. And some say this was Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, that he saw an image of himself. That too is a little bit deep to understand. That's a very deep mefarish. On a higher level, within that realm, you see that it was Gabriel, Michael, Uriel. And some say that it was Michael, Gabriel, Michael, Raphael, and Uriel. That all these angels came to advise Avram on the next steps when it came time for the Mila, for the healing, Raphael, and the Basura of Sodom, and the saving of Lot. So it's also fascinating to share with everybody that I learned a long time ago that when someone says they learn Gemara, they don't really understand what they're saying. The Gemara is actually Rashi Tevos of these four angels. Gemara is Gavriel, Michal, Raphael, Uriel. that these malachim are protecting a person when they learn. And since when we are learning, we're also quoting from the Gemara and different mefarshim, that too, even though we're not delving into the Mishnah and the Tashma and the Gemara and the Rashi Tosafot, that too is just ancillary to this discussion because it's one and the same. And so that's also Shemir for Klal Yisrael. So that's how we start off the Parsha. In the middle, we see that this is the daughter of Lot that's calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for assistance. Why? She was tarred and feathered and a miserable death. Why? Only because she was trying to help somebody else. And in Sodom, much like Rome in later generations, they would have the opinion that if somebody was meant to be poor, then there was divine. And if somebody's meant to be rich, then that too was divine. And the two cannot have nothing to do with each other. These are social classes, and they need separation, one from the other. So the Torah is not like that, because the Torah says, Efes kilo yebecha evyon. We don't turn our back when someone needs help. We roll up our sleeves and we say, maybe I know somebody that can help you with Parnassa. Maybe I can help you with Parnassa. Maybe I can give you coaching on how to get Parnassa. Maybe I can put you in touch with someone, Piskuli Shari Tzedek. I could open up windows of opportunity for you. So here was this girl trying to help others, and this poor man that she was trying to feed, and obviously that went against the rules and the cultures of the people in that town. And so even though she did great acts, it was her cries that went right up to Shemayim. So what does that teach us? That teaches us that a person has the power to change circumstances by calling out, by crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't have to feel embarrassed, because you can just as easily say that you're talking on your Bluetooth and nobody would know the better. And you can mask it and not really reveal that you're talking to Hashem. But it's okay. It's actually encouraged. A person should feel comfortable talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone has something that they need, that they want, that they're desiring, that they're hopeful for. I was davening for my friend for several months to get a parnasa, to get a job. I was thinking every time, Baruch Aleinu, Hashanah Azos, I was thinking that my good friend, Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Liba, should have amazing yeshuos. And Baruch Hashem, I was delighted to hear that Baruch Hashem is back on his feet. So every one of us, we can daven for ourselves, but if we daven for others, Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at that also just as favorably. Look, how many things a person wants, and yet they also want for others. So we should take upon ourselves to think of somebody, even if we don't think that they need the help, we should ask for their Hebrew name and daven for them. There was a time during war when we were davening for Chayalim, Chayalot, and every time we davened, we were attaching ourselves to these people, and it was really an amazing connection among Klal Yisrael. So this cry that came out from this young girl was enough to stir the heavens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to look down upon these people in Sodom and Gomorrah and to say that this is unacceptable behavior. And so we can learn something valuable from that, even though it was a tragic circumstance. The last is that when we look at the end of the parsha and we see that the Akedah is there, And then it says that he has children, and wait a minute, Nachar is a brother to Avram. He doesn't have any relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ostensibly so. Perhaps I'm wrong, but we don't know much about Nachar. We don't know much about his observance. We do know that Avraham Avinu was tested 10 times. The Rambam and Rashi differ, and Mefarshim differ, what exactly these tests were. First, of course, was Lech Lecha, to go from your comfort zone of your own land to go into a foreign land, and then the different nisyonos when it came to Sarah, and the different nisyonos leading up to the Akedah, and the Rav, and the famine. All these were just one test after another. And Avraham Avinu, you have to understand that he was really no different than us in a way, that we're just struggling to get by and to do what we can. And Kadosh Baruch Hu, God is testing him day and night, all the time. And if you don't want to, if you really love me so much, don't test me, or don't love me so much, just leave me alone. And after all these tests, he almost lost his son. He did lose his wife as a result of the news that came back that the palit, The Palit actually was Og, Melech HaBashan. That's also Adas Akenim. Later on in Devarim, that brings down exactly who this Palit was. That's the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu in later generations was slightly terrified of confronting him. And so why was he so afraid? Because he was so old. He actually survived, goes all the way back to the time of Noah. So this is not a simple arch enemy. And by the way, I'm pausing just to say that we're learning as a Refuah Shlema to Rabbi Yishaya ben Masha, who's a close friend of mine, Shai Eisen, who's just an amazing, amazing person, a father of several kids, and a Hatzalah member, and he's hopefully on the mend in Eretz Yisrael after recovering from surgery. And so we should all have in mind Surah Sovas with Shai ben Masha. Please include him in your Rafa'enu every single day, God willing. We shall know of Surah Sovos. But just getting back to this idea of what is the significance of this last paragraph telling us about Avram's brother Nachar having all of these children, 8, and then 4 additional ones from concubine. It's enough to drive Avram mad and to say to God, how is this fair? You're testing me all the time. You never test him. He's got a large family. I'm struggling to have mine. I had to send away Yishmael, even though it wasn't so pleasing in my eyes. But the Torah tells me, Hashem told me, Kol Hashem told my Sarah Shema B'Kola. You got to listen to whatever you want, especially if your name is Sarah. And my wife's name is Sarah. So I always have to listen to what my wife says. But how much more so Avraham Avinu had to listen? He was married to the first Sarah. And so now he sends away one son, and now he's almost shechting the second son, and he returns and he loses his wife. And meanwhile, his brother has all these kids. So what does it say? Vayugal Avram. And it lists out all the kids, but doesn't say what Avram Avinu had said. And the answer is because the Torah is telling us he said nothing. And that's the whole mussar of the whole of our Torah for this last piece. Because there are a lot of challenges that people face, and there are a lot of times when we want to open up our mouth and complain. Yaakov Avinu could have complained too. I'm trying to raise a family. I'm constantly feeling like I'm on the run, and I can't seem to just relax. Yaakov Bikesh Leishib B'Shalva. What's wrong with that? Every so often, people need to relax and chill out. But no, Rashi tells us. You mean you want to have both worlds, Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, by sitting back and not doing so much work? We, as Jewish people, have to keep on moving. We have to keep on learning and growing. And so Avraham Avinu has this amazing opportunity to turn to this palit and just open up and complain and to say all these things that he probably was thinking on his mind, how much we can only imagine what Avraham Avinu was thinking. And he says nothing. So the fact that he didn't say anything teaches us a tremendous, tremendous Moshe Haskel in Avraham Avinu's approach and relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the message that he's imparting to all of us. So to summarize everything we just discussed, change happens all the time, but we have the option of reacting. And how could we react? We could react like Avraham Avinu, who sometimes, in this circumstance, said nothing. He didn't complain about anything. So yes, change happens. People are not comfortable with change. But it's all a matter of perspective and how we deal with the change and whether or not we're in the position of complaining, or whether or not we're in the position of saying, Kalman Davrachlama Tavavit, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I have no idea what is going on right now. However, I trust, I have to trust, I'm forced to trust that whatever it is that God you want, Kalman Davrachman, whatever Hashem does, Latavavit, He's doing it for our own good. How is it good? Risa Machorai. We may not be able to understand and recognize right now, but in some time, as time passes, we will be able to see the good. And everything is good. And if a person lives life like this, then he'll be positive, optimistic, encouraged. He'll be able to inspire. He'll have emunah. And these are elements, these are facets of attributes that we all need to have in our daily lives. It's something that should serve as a source of like a foundation for us by which we can grow. And the middle part of the parasha teaches us something also valuable, the value of, seeing things, reacting to them, calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asking Hashem for help and talking to Hashem. That level of exposure is not something that's somehow encouraged. I'm not sure why, but it's definitely something that could be explored on a perhaps on a more granular level for each individual. And in that tzchus, God willing, we're showing the Besoros Tovos and happy occasions to come. And our Refuah Shleima, of course, to my dear friend, Yishai ben Masha. And we're hoping and praying that he should continue to feel better and get stronger. Mordechai Plotzker, wishing you the very best. And best of Shem, I'll be back next Sunday night.